Think about someone you know who has been flying for 30 years. Maybe it's a flight instructor from your earliest lessons. Maybe it's a friend who keeps a Piper Cherokee in the hangar next to yours. Maybe it's you, a private pilot. Maybe instrument rated. Someone who flies a Cessna 172 on weekend mornings just to get above the clouds for an hour. For that pilot, flying isn't a hobby. It's part of their identity. And then one afternoon they get a letter, or their aviation medical examiner writes something in their notes, or a blood test comes back with a number the FAA system doesn't quite know how to handle. And just like that, the path forward gets complicated. I'm Pattern on Radio Hangar, and this is Traffic Pattern. Today we're unpacking basic med, not the press release version, the actual regulation. What it is, what it requires, who qualifies, where the limits are, and how to use it correctly. This is one of those regulations that changed real lives when it took effect in 2017, and yet a surprising number of pilots still have a fuzzy picture of exactly how it works. Let's fix that. Before we get into it, a quick thank you to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial. There's a coin for each milestone that matters. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with some history, because the history here matters. For decades, if you wanted to exercise private pilot privileges, you needed an FAA medical certificate. The Federal Aviation Administration's medical system worked in three tiers: first class for airline transport pilots, second class for commercial operations, third class for private pilot privileges. For most people, getting a third class medical was straightforward. See an aviation medical examiner, or AME. Answer some questions, get a physical, walk out with your certificate. Repeat every 5 years if you're under 40, every 2 years if you're 40 or older, simple enough. But for a significant and growing number of pilots, the third class medical was anything but simple. It was a barrier. A complicated, expensive, sometimes years-long obstacle built out of paperwork and waiting and uncertainty. Think about the conditions that triggered what's called the special issuance process. A diagnosis of depression, even depression that had been treated successfully and resolved years earlier. High blood pressure controlled with medication and completely stable. A cardiac procedure years in the past with no ongoing symptoms, diabetes. Certain medications regardless of whether the underlying condition had any bearing on the pilot's ability to fly safely. The special issuance process meant submitting specialist reports, arranging additional evaluations, and sending paperwork to the FAA's Aeromedical Certification Division in Oklahoma City, then waiting sometimes months, sometimes longer, and sometimes spending thousands of dollars to eventually receive a denial. Some pilots gave up flying entirely. Others turned to light sport aircraft, where sport pilot rules allow you to use a valid driver's license in place of a medical certificate, provided you've never had an FAA medical denied or revoked. That worked for pilots who wanted to fly a light sport aircraft, but most of the planes sitting in general aviation hangars across the country don't qualify as light sport. A Cessna 172 doesn't qualify. A Piper Cherokee doesn't qualify. A Beechcraft Bonanza doesn't qualify. The aviation community had been pushing for reform for years. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, or AOPA, and the Experimental Aircraft Association, or EAA, led the charge. They brought data to Congress showing that the third-class medical requirement was not meaningfully contributing to safety in private pilot operations. The accident statistics simply did not support the regulatory burden being placed on general aviation pilots flying under Part 91. Congress listened. The Pilots' Bill of Rights II, sometimes written PBOR II, was signed into law in 2016. The FAA spent the following year developing the actual rules. With significant input from the aviation community, and on May 1, 2017, Basic Med officially went into effect. So, what exactly is Basic Med? It is a formal FAA-approved alternative medical qualification pathway. Not a loophole, not a workaround. A regulatory structure with its own requirements and its own limitations. Pilots who qualify can exercise private pilot, recreational pilot, or student pilot privileges without holding a traditional FAA medical certificate. Here is how the process works in practice. First, you need to have held a valid FAA medical certificate at some point on or after July 15, 2006. That is the anchor date built into the regulation. If you held a medical after that date, even if it expired years ago, you may be eligible for Basic Med. Second, every 4 years, you need to see your personal physician, not an aviation medical examiner, your own doctor, the one who knows your full medical history and sees you regularly. During that visit, You complete what's called the Comprehensive Medical Examination Checklist, a specific form the FAA provides. Your physician goes through it with you, examines you, and you both sign it. You keep a copy. Your doctor keeps a copy. Third, every 2 years you complete an online medical education course. Both AOPA and EAA offer FAA-approved versions of this course. The content covers aeromedical topics relevant to flight, hypoxia, spatial disorientation, the effects of common medications on cognitive performance, fatigue, and how it degrades decision-making. It takes a couple of hours. When you finish, you receive a completion certificate, and that certificate stays in your records. That is the entire process. No paperwork pipeline to Oklahoma City, no stacks of specialist evaluations, no sitting by the mailbox for months. You see your doctor, you take the course, you keep the documentation, and you go fly. Now, I want to walk through the operational limitations carefully, because this is where pilots sometimes have gaps in their understanding. The aircraft you fly under basic med must have a maximum certificated takeoff weight of 6,000 pounds or less. That covers the vast majority of general aviation aircraft. Your Cessna 172, your Piper Aero, your Beechcraft Bonanza, your Cirrus SR-22. But some of the heavier piston twins and turboprops start to approach or exceed that number. Always verify the maximum certificated takeoff weight in the type certificate data sheet if you're not certain. You can carry up to 5 passengers, 6 people total in the aircraft, including you. You cannot fly above 18,000 feet mean sea level. For most general aviation operations, this is not a practical constraint, but it does rule out flying at the flight levels in a pressurized aircraft. You cannot exceed 250 knots indicated airspeed. Most general aviation aircraft never get close to that number, but know where the line is. You cannot fly for compensation or hire. Basic Med is for private, non-commercial operations. The moment you're being paid to fly, you need a traditional FAA medical certificate and the appropriate pilot privileges to go with it. You cannot fly in Class A airspace, which begins at 18,000 feet mean sea level. And here is one that catches pilots by surprise. You cannot fly internationally under Basic Med unless the country you're entering specifically recognizes it. Some countries do. Many don't. If you're planning a flight into Canada, or heading to the Bahamas, or flying anywhere outside U.S. airspace, verify with that country's civil aviation authority before you depart. Do not assume Basic Med travels with you. Now let's talk about the medical standard itself, because there's a misconception here worth addressing directly. Your personal physician is not certifying that you are medically fit to fly. They're certifying that you don't present any of the conditions specifically listed on the Comprehensive Medical Examination Checklist as disqualifying under Basic Med. That list is shorter than the list for third-class medical certificates, but it is real and it is enforceable. Disqualifying conditions include things like a psychotic disorder, a personality disorder that has manifested in overt acts, bipolar disorder, and substance dependence. If your physician discovers something on that list during your examination, they are required not to sign the checklist. And the pilot's own responsibility here cannot be overstated. The relevant regulation is Federal Aviation Regulation 61.23. It requires you to ground yourself anytime you know you have a medical deficiency that would make you unable to meet the basic med requirements. This is the same self-certification obligation that governs all medical certification in general aviation, just expressed through a different administrative structure. Basic Med did not lower the safety standard. It changed how that standard is administered and who administers it. Here's something I want pilots to understand about why Basic Med was designed the way it was. When pilots first heard, "You don't need to see an AME anymore," some assumed that was a relaxation of oversight. What actually happened was a deliberate shift in who provides that oversight. Your personal physician, who has your complete medical history, who has seen you over years or decades, who knows how you're actually doing day to day, arguably has better and more complete information about your health than an aviation medical examiner who sees you for 15 or 20 minutes once every few years. EAA made this case to the FAA explicitly during the rulemaking process. A personal physician is not a lesser source of medical oversight. In many cases, they're a more informed one. What Basic Med eliminated was the bureaucratic overhead, the documentation burden, the waiting, for pilots with stable, well-managed conditions that had no meaningful impact on their safety as pilots. That was the change that mattered. Let me paint a practical picture of who benefits most from this regulation. Pilots over 50 or 60 managing normal age-related health conditions, high blood pressure controlled with medication, controlled type 2 diabetes, which under the old special issuance structure required an extensive process just to hold a third-class medical. Pilots with a history of cardiac procedures who are stable and asymptomatic years later. Pilots who were treated for depression or anxiety at some point and are doing well. None of these people are inherently unsafe pilots. The old system was failing them. Basic Med was designed specifically to fix that. Let me also walk through the record keeping, because this is where some pilots get sloppy, and sloppy paperwork under Basic Med is a real compliance problem. You need to keep three things current and accessible: your signed comprehensive medical examination checklist, completed with your physician within the last 4 years, your online course completion certificate from within the last 2 years, and your driver's license, which you carry when you fly in lieu of a medical certificate. When you exercise Basic Med privileges, you carry your pilot certificate and your driver's license. There is no medical certificate to carry because you don't have one under this pathway. Your driver's license is what establishes your identity and your authorization to fly. One scenario worth flagging explicitly. If your most recent FAA medical was denied or revoked, not simply expired but denied or revoked, you cannot use Basic Med. The regulation requires that you held a valid medical at some point after July 15, 2006. A denial is not the same as holding a certificate. If the FAA denied your application rather than issuing and then later revoking a certificate, your eligibility may be affected. That is a situation where talking to an aviation attorney before you fly under Basic Med is the right move. On the other hand, if you currently hold a valid third-class medical, there is nothing requiring you to switch to Basic Med. Many pilots continue with their traditional medical certificate and see no reason to change. Basic Med is an option, not a mandate. For the pilots who couldn't get a third-class medical or couldn't sustain one, it's an option that changed their flying lives. For student pilots working toward the private certificate, the Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, expects you to understand the regulatory framework for medical certification. Your examiner won't necessarily quiz you on every nuance of Basic Med during the oral, but you should understand what medical certification pathway you're operating under and what the limitations of that pathway are. Read Federal Aviation Regulation 6123. It's not a long section, and it's one of the more clearly written parts of the regulations. Here's something worth carrying away from all of this. Regulations in aviation aren't fixed forever. They change when the community shows up, brings data, and makes a coherent case for reform. Basic Med is a direct result of thousands of pilots, AOPA and EAA, doing exactly that. That's worth knowing not just as history, but because there are other places in the regulatory structure where the same kind of sustained advocacy still needs to happen. The information for today came from Federal Aviation Regulation 6123, the FAA's published Basic Med guidance, and materials from both AOPA and EAA. Both organizations have detailed resources on their websites if you want to go deeper, more at RadioHangar.com. I'm Pattern. Stay current out there.